I'm your discussion leader, and my subject is the American family in crisis. My work has been very intensely on the problems of the black family, and I wanted to expand this so that we would, I think somebody would be kind of a paradigm, the black family in my discussion would be kind of a paradigm for the American family, but in our discussion period, and as I come to the end of my presentation, and in the discussion period, I hope that we will feel free to really, you know, be honest in our engagement about problems facing American families in general. You know that one thing that inspired many of us was the book that Haley wrote on, entitled Roots. And it led to many families, American families, trying to find their ancestral roots. And that process still goes on. One of the important things that happened among blacks was that they began to not only find their roots, but to have more family reunions. And there is a constant flow of black families during this time of year from inner cities of the North back to the South. And there are a number of large family reunions going on. And they have not only a festive overtone, but they have a very religious focus. I was inspired as one who had been working in the black church and in the theological school. I was at Howard University for more than two decades on the faculty of theology, and had been involved in the new consciousness of the black community and many of the movements that have taken place from the time of the civil rights movement down to the present time. And I had noted that as a religious scholar, there had been no one who had done a serious study on the black church and the black family. My colleagues in other fields, in sociology and history, had written on the family, like E. Franklin Frazier and W. Du Bois. People had written on the family from a sociological or from a historical point of view, but I felt the time had come for someone who was in the field of religion. And my discipline is systematic theology, to try to do something serious on the family and the church. We found that during the period of transition in race relations, the civil rights movement, the black power, black consciousness movement, and the involvement of people, grassroots people, middle class people, and so on, in those movements, that the family had been in a state of unrest, uncertainty. We also had noticed that in the studies, which had come from the sociologists and historians, for example, that there had been some attempt to explain why the black family was in a state of crisis. And that they had researched the various periods of family dislocation, beginning with the slavery period, what slavery did to the black family, for example, and then what the movement from the southern part of the country, from the agricultural south to the industrial north, what that had done to the black family by uprooting it and presenting certain serious problems, economic, social, psychological, so forth. And Monaghan Report, I think, was a catalyst. Monaghan wrote about the black family and criticized it for the predominance of the mother in the family over against the absent father. We also found that the welfare programs had very often been administered in ways that split up the family, that made it necessary for an unemployed black father to leave his family in order for the family to get welfare funds. So there were many economic, cultural, racial, and other factors which made the black family existing state of crises and uncertainty, and I felt the importance of a study that would inform the ministers who have great influence over communities to understand the problems, and to do it from a, I did it from a biblical and theological point of view, using, connecting the extended family that came out of the African and Afro-American heritage that had been interrupted and disrupted by slavery and discrimination and in the economic situation. I connected up the extended family that we knew in Africa and also the religion that nurtured this extended family in Africa and the disruptions which had taken place in the American environment and the continuing influence of the church and the ministry to bring families together and to minister to families. And so I worked the model of the family of God, the body of Christ, so as to make the point that there ought to be some real connection between these two very important institutions that are important for the nurture and even the survival of black people in a very hostile situation. And then the last part of my book was an attempt to suggest ways in which a constructive ministry might take place, both in the healing and in the institutional dimensions of ministry. That is, how would the church minister to the pathologies which are primarily personal and familial or within the family as a small intimate group, and also how would they deal with those structural problems in society that trigger the pathology? Why is it that there are so many female-headed families? What are the causes for that, and how can we correct some of those things so that black men can be responsible fathers and husbands? What can we do in the economy, in the political order, in the social order to rearrange the situation so that the causes can be removed and we can do some healing and reconcile and work between families through the churches and through the ministry of churches? That was my basic concern there. But this led me into a consideration of a number of other problems which were not necessarily problems of ministry, problems dealing primarily with psychological wounds that may be within the family and separations that may be between parent and child, between husband and wife. And I was driven to be concerned about the subsystems in the family, how some conflict between husband and wife could also trigger sibling rivalry, that is, conflict between the children, which may not be directly related to the children not being able to relate to each other, but directly in reaction to tensions between father and mother, which may be pushed back to some kind of sociological, economic, or other causes. I became concerned about each segment of the black community, for example, problems that are peculiar to black women, problems that are peculiar to black men, and the problems that are peculiar to the black child. So that I took the family apart and tried to put it back together again, but tried to come up with some suggestions as to how ministers in a very practical way, and churches also, might be able to produce healthy families and to nurture those families. For example, what I discovered in looking at the practice in most churches was that the programs were arranged so as to divide up the generations and the different sexes and not to bring them together. And therefore, we would deliberately suggest programs and plans that would be designed to bring, say, fathers and sons together, mothers and daughters together, but the whole family together at stated times, and to nurture the significant relationship of the generations, across generations, intergenerational communication, activities, and growth together as families. I became aware of that in my own family, my own personal family. When I started teaching, I was in my home state, North Carolina, and then I moved to Washington. And North Carolina happens to be my home state and my wife's home state. While we were in North Carolina, we were constantly in touch with a large extended family on both sides, families on both sides of the spectrum. But when we went to Washington, we were a good distance from our extended families. And we had four children. Very early, we decided that it would be important for us to maintain constant communication and exchange between the larger family and our own nuclear family. And therefore, we spent most of our major holidays and much of the summers, when it was possible to do so, in North Carolina, or we had segments of the family from North Carolina to visit us in Washington. And in this way, we were able to maintain a very warm extended family connection that was very supportive of the intimate family. We found that very meaningful, and therefore it was not difficult for us to plug into the new mood for family reunions and nurturing the relationship and support system of a larger family. And I see this as a problem that is not peculiar to any particular race or ethnic group in the United States, but certainly a problem which all of us may well be interested in, the problem of having to follow the job market, finding oneself at some distance from the extended family where one has been nurtured and sustained, and either uprooting oneself and one's children from that background, or finding a way to continue to nurture those roots. And we found it to be very helpful, not just for us, but especially for the children, to grow up with an awareness of an intimate understanding of this family, this larger family, to be able to relate to aunts and uncles and cousins. This became very personal in my experience when in 1977 I lost my own son in a tragic automobile accident. He was 19 years of age, in perfect health. And it was at that time that I became very much aware of the importance of my nephews. Just as I had finished, we took his body to North Carolina for the funeral, and right after the funeral, I had another tragic message that my house had been burglarized back in the Washington area and had lost considerable property. A neighbor had discovered it, and it was one of my nephews who immediately said, "We will leave tonight and I'll drive you to Washington." And since that time, these nephews have been very sensitive to that loss, and they have become like sons. But this is because during the years, they had been very closely related to my children, to my son. They had been like brothers to my son, and had been brothers like brothers to my daughter. And so the extended family came into play and was a very powerful support system for me in that particular instance of crisis. But it's paid off in other ways. I had a daughter in Los Angeles finishing her work, and she needed to be moved back to the Washington area, and I had my nephew to go out and bring her back. That's what my son would have done, but now that the family, the extended family, begins to take up some of the slack as a result of this loss, but it's because the nurture and support system was always intact. And I can imagine that would be a very important kind of thing that's very important to all families. And also the economic transition from one job to another, moving from place to place, does reshuffle the family and create and precipitate certain crises. And it is this ability of the church to be perceptive in the counseling role and in the support system role that is very important. So I see the concern we have as Christians in the body of Christ and the concern we have as members of families has come together in a very powerful way. And so I've talked about the church as the family of God and used that as a theological paradigm. I think we think of the family as a place where everyone has significance and worth and dignity. Everybody's somebody. As a matter of fact, we do not place value on members of the family because of age, because of sex, because of other things, but in some sense, everybody's somebody, and the smallest child is just as precious as the oldest person in the family. And very often there is also an appreciation for the people who are in the category of grandparents and great-grandparents and so forth within a healthy family, intergenerational family relationship and network. And that is a very important support system for all of us in the uncertainties that exist in our society. And as I think about peculiar problems that black families face, I spend a great deal of time in dialogue with women in the church, and especially those who are seeking to become ordained ministers. I have been for 3 years now president of a major theological center in Atlanta, Georgia, with 300 students from six denominations, and there's an unevenness about ordination of women. Some of the denominations readily ordain women, send them forth on an equal basis with men. Others still have to grow to that point where they can accept women even in the pulpit, or not to even mention ordination. So there's a lot of growth that's necessary and a lot of sensitivity that needs to be established in those regards. So that I'm concerned about the church as fulfilling its Christian mission and really practicing what it preaches about the equality of all people. And so the problem of women, even in the church, the leadership of women in the church is still one which has to be addressed. But also we have a very peculiar problem with the black man. And much of it has to do with the way in which all blacks have been kept out of the system, but especially the way in which the black man has been mistreated by the society in which he lives. And the lack of job opportunity for black men today is really a crisis situation, over against the fact that many black women are able to get jobs and therefore able to be breadwinners. And this does something for a tour man when he's not able to, even if he wants to find a job, to find some way of being responsible in this regard. And it's kind of a intergenerational problem, because once you get a man who does not have the skills and education to be responsible as father and husband, then he's likely to become a role model for the sons who repeat the same mistake. On the other side of the spectrum, we have an undue amount of illegitimacy, because once you get a welfare mother who has a large family and becomes dependent on the welfare system, producing children who grow up and who produce children who also depend on the welfare system, you have on that spectrum a self-fulfilling prophecy. The conditions seem to perpetuate this condition, and we need to be thinking about ways to have an intervention to change this. At some point we need to arrest that trend. We need to find a way to turn the situation around so that we can begin to have some healing and reconciliation in that regard. Right now we have a situation where the only alternative for many young black males is to go to jail or go to the army or to some military post. If they do not go in one of those directions, then the next thing may be a life of crime and it'd be all downhill. I like to think of my own experience at 16 years of age. I finished high school. I happened to be fortunate to have a father and mother who were devout members of the church, and it was in the family that I was nurtured in the Christian faith. And therefore I had a certain perspective on life, and I had teachers and ministers who gave me some aspirations for my life and helped open some doors. But at 16 years of age, I decided that it was time for me to leave and go to college. I knew that the alternative would not be very wholesome. And so I remember, as I went back recently to bury my father, that about a mile from my home in a little town foot of the mountains of North Carolina is a prison camp. And many of my colleagues spent their entire life in that prison or somewhere else. And I knew as I grew up that I had to make a radical choice. So it happened that at that time I was called to the ministry and went to college to study for the ministry. I said to someone recently that I thought I was called, but I took about 2 years off to really find out whether or not that was what I wanted to do. And so when I finally decided that this was really what I wanted to do, I was steadfast from that point on. But the initial experience was not enough. It was necessary for me to go through an intellectual crisis, really, as well as a religious crisis, to really be sure or certain that this was what I really wanted to do for a lifetime. But at least it got me out of that situation where I could have chosen the wrong path, except for the grace of God and for some people who ministered to me, this might have been my lot. And so I've been very sensitive to this ever since. I recall I was in Baltimore, and one of my students was a chaplain there in the city jail. And I noticed that the jail had been built, not only the jail, but the penitentiary had been located right in the heart of a black ghetto. And the thing that was so tragic was that it seemed that this had become a kind of finishing school, a place where every young man felt he had to eventually go in order to be a man. The role models were not outside of the prison, but in the prison. And I noticed that people would speak friendly out of the window to people they knew. And it was kind of a way to grow up, to be a man. So I began to realize how important role models are in the family, especially the father for the sons, mother for the daughter, and both parents for all children. The family becomes, in my estimation, a tremendous resource for the education of human life, the formation of character, and for the nurture of the Christian faith very early in life so that our young people can grow up and be responsible for themselves and for the rest of mankind. I wanted, most of all, to throw those things out so that we could get some dialogue going. I think I could be more helpful if I could respond to concrete situations and concerns which members of the group may have. So I'd like to turn to that phase of my work now. Let's not everybody speak at the same time. Yes. Yes, well, I have seen some very creative things done just by ministers who were sensitive to these problems and who were, they had no plan to program, but they stumbled up on some very good projects. And I mentioned earlier that some of them have decided that there should be opportunities in the program of the church for families to come together. So they built in festive occasions, banquets and fellowship activities, study groups and so forth that would deal with family concerns, not just, you know, male, female, boy, girl, man, woman, but really bringing families together and emphasizing the importance of family life as a whole. But they have also been mindful of the need to get younger couples together who may have special problems. People of the same age class who have just been married for 5 years and who have young children, they have special concerns. They also have concerns for single persons who are not married, men and women. They have peculiar problems which must be addressed by the church. And a sensitive minister will also be concerned with different family styles. I remember I was given a workshop on the family in a church, and I was going down pretty much the line of the ideal family with a husband and wife, boy and girl, you know. And a mother came to me and said, I have a daughter who is divorced, and she lives with me with her children, and that's our family. What do you have to say to us? So you have to become sensitive. And this grows out of dialogue. This grows out of people really laying issues and circumstances and conditions on you. It comes out in counseling sessions. Many ministers have developed in churches a significant counseling program. And some large churches have taken on the staff, persons who are involved in family, marriage and family counseling. We have become aware that families need therapy, that families can be sick, as well as individuals, and that we have to try to get to the causes of those problems. I think in this we also get to the parents, and we help them to find ways to be sensitive to why young people very often react negatively to one thing when they're really bothered by something else. And just by having a relationship, in my own relationship with my children, I have found that there are various stages that require different understandings about the relationship. There's a crisis period at puberty, but there's also a crisis period when they're about to leave the nest, so to speak, when they're about to go out on their own, want to be independent, and yet, you know, you're going to have to sustain them for time until they can become thoroughly independent. But in one way, they want to be independent. Another way, they are also dependent. You have to realize that somehow that relationship has to be sustained. That's easy to throw them out. I remember my son moved out, just moved out. I was on a trip, and he told me that he was leaving. He was angry with his sister. And I knew it was a temporary thing, but he left and went to stay with his cousin. And it was some time before he came back. I helped to sustain him while he was away, and I kept the relationship intact. I went to visit him. He came to visit me. We talked man to man about problems that he faced out there in the world. He finally found out he couldn't make it at this particular stage on his own. He had to go to school and get more skills. And I could have just said, you know, since you have left, let's forget it. I think these are the kind of things that are very important, and it seems to me the church can be, and the minister can be very helpful. Once the dialogue on family problems and relationships becomes a part of the life of the church to deal with those kinds of things, and there are unique problems that come up. But the lines of communication are open now, and that is, I think, the important thing. Yes.
Even people, I know some church that people seem very nervous about gathering today. I don't know if it's just today or some other time. Some people seem very concerned about getting more information, you know, more help with that.
Well, I think it's good that they are nervous about it. I think it's one of the most difficult things, yet the most important, one of the most important things that one could possibly be engaged in. But what I found is that there are so many external forces that impinge upon child rearing that you have very little to do with in our time. The impact of mass media on shaping values and goals for children is something that's, you know, that's high technology, but there are benefits and there are disabilities built into it that affect the growing child. And then the peer relationships. You know, when I grew up, and my parents would be very protective of me. They could almost choose my friends and my activities in the small town where I grew up. But today, this is not possible in major cities to a great extent. And so I think that it becomes a very delicate thing to try to rear children, even if you have a very strong family situation with good values and with the nurture of the church and so forth intact. And it becomes a very difficult task because of the impinging circumstances that come in from the outside. For example, the traffic in drugs is a good example. There are very few families that do not have to deal with that sometime in the teenage period. And it can be so destructive at an early age, as you know, that it's something that you may not be able to recover from. It can be that devastating. And yet, there's a delicate balance there between too much control and finding a way to have influence which sees the child through that.
Even if both parents are very much responsible today. That's a very difficult problem. I've been very close to some of the young people who have gone into new religions, and many of them are wonderful young people, but they have a conflict with their parents over ideologies, religion, values, and so forth, and they're independent. I mean, it's a matter for some young people of having the right to make up their own mind about their own lives, and very often parents can be overbearing and insist that you embrace certain values if you stay in this house. And they're willing to say goodbye. If they're strong personalities. I think in the same family, I remember a man said he had a hippie and a square dinner table. One son was radical, you know, and he wanted to be his own boss, so forth. The other was, you know, so obedient until he was really worried about him being so obedient because he didn't know how he was going to make it when he got out of the shelter of the home. So that we have different types of personalities to deal with, and we have to, I think, tailor our response to each one. But I think the important thing is to maintain, as far as possible, a relationship of trust and to feel that there are times when you need to really sit down and talk to the children about things or young people about things for them to be willing and free to come to you. I found that very often when my children have been in great distress, they have come to me and they've found ways to raise questions in very odd ways. And I try to find time to respond when they are ready. There are other times when I'm ready and they're not. And it would be an imposition on them for me to broach the subject and alienate them at that time. But when they are ready, they come. But the relationship has to be there so that they feel that they can come when they need to come. No one can say exactly, you know, how to do it, but you'll find a way. If you really want to maintain the relationship, it'll be very difficult, but it can be maintained. You have to give a little, and yet you have to be firm at the same time. Both. Yes?
With our background as Christians and the understanding that we need to be reaching out to those who have received what we have received, given the situation of the family and the church, and then the situation of the reaching out, we were discussing children, how can we best facilitate reaching out, say, to the children around us who don't have the church atmosphere, and maintain our sense of value and structure in the family? Because there's a kind of pulling tension where you want to reach out and you want to protect. And you mentioned the type of
well, there are traditional programs. I know I worked intensely with the Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts, and my son was in the eighth class. I found that a very useful thing, not only to help my son, but to help other sons, to become a big brother to sons who didn't have fathers. As a matter of fact, it was through that program that I became aware of the possibility of touching the lives of other young people. But it was my concern for development of my own son that led me into that activity, that led me to reach out. And I've had a sensitivity in that direction ever since, and I've adopted a number of young men as big brothers, I mean as brothers, as younger brothers since that time. And some of them have adopted me because they did not know a father. But I think it began at that point. So I think there are activities like that, Girl Scouts and other activities, where you do have the chance of working with your own children and helping them grow, but also reaching out and instilling values and perspectives in other children. Those who are in education have the opportunity to do that through counseling, through teaching, through adopting children who are lonely, who need someone to guide them. A great deal of my inspiration in early life came from my teachers. And I go back to see my elementary teacher now, who saw something I didn't see at that time, some potential that I didn't realize I had. But she followed that right straight through. She never abandoned me. I think there are many opportunities like that through existing organizations, networks, if we could just find our way to use them. And perhaps that's the most natural way to do it than to, you know, organize something different. Yes.
In every question, there is a loser child center. And they deal with children who have rather severe problems. But out of their experiences, they have developed a program of, a program for young parents to come together and to help understand what they can expect other children as they go into school. And the idea is not a how-to, but an awareness that they know what their children are facing. And their hopes is that this will help prevent some of these family problems with young people. And what I want to ask is, do you know of any other church organizations or any type that deal with the problems that have been in
No, I'm not aware of any particular program, but I'm really excited about that possibility. I think every church should have that kind of insight that if we can prevent some problems, I think awareness is very important, awareness of problems that will emerge, will surface, will have to be dealt with.
Now, they dwell on the idea that it's natural for parents not to know what is going on, such a parent wants, and that's it.
That's true.
And this is what the we try to promote it, we could have been young parents to come to the class for whatever reason, they don't know.
Right. Well, this is a way that persons who have had the experience could share in dialogue with those who are emerging in this category of responsibility. That would be an excellent way for the church to minister. Yes. Sure.
Young parents, I remember when my first children were born, I don't recall the support group other than maybe a neighbor. No, we did have a neighbor in the center. Now I'm working as a homeless. And I just didn't have a little place. We had a group of people, and maybe some of this little big facility that I
Now this has the possibility of some intergenerational conversation, as well as people of the same age class and the same circumstance, you know, sharing with each other. But those who are older, who've gone through it, can also share with those who are now in the process. So this is exciting. Yes.
I just wanted to comment on this last question. I think the extended family is going to support those who refer to it for the opportunity. If they have older cousins, they've already had them in their family, I've had them in their family. And then, of course, I have a family, and it's that at least the problem.
we can be self-critical about a family, extended family. There are some good things that might come from it, and then there are some bad things that might come from it. As long as we can maintain that distance where we can be self-critical of the family. For example, some families are plagued with alcoholism among the men in the family. And, you know, it's just understood that if you grow up to be a man, you're going to be, you know, nursing the bottle. And that's something that you don't want to really buy into. And yet there are other things in that same family that are very wholesome. And I think that's the kind of the distance and criticism that's necessary even within the in the family. So.
You discussed
Well, I would say Bible study would be a good way. You could do it through that. Some not just social activities, that's important, and fun together and fellowship and all that. I mean, that's part of it. But some serious dialogue about the meaning of the family and so on from a biblical and theological perspective to get a deeper meaning into the significance of family life and one's participation in it. I think that would be one of the things that could happen normally within the context of the educative role of the church that might not happen outside of the church. The suggestion also that we might have something like family altars again, that some of the best aspects of fellowship in the church and understanding of Bible reading and meditation, worship that takes place in the church might also take place in the family, so that there would be a link up between the experience in the home and experience in the body of Christ. Once you get a perspective on the intimate relationship between these two important institutions, primary institutions, how they can interface and how they can be mutually enriching, then I think you can find creative ways of doing things in the family. An intimate family relation in the home that would interface with what's going on also in a larger context within the church setting. I would recommend that very highly.
In the area of classes, do you find that children tend to drop their parents?
The children?
I say, in the area of classes, do you find that children to drop their parents? Some parents can be kind of quiet in the classes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it depends upon how it's done, I suppose, and that could be creative ways of you know, of drawing out the parents as well as the children, but some people are just naturally docile in discussions, and some are outspoken. That have to be a methodology where you would get everybody, just make sure that everybody has their say and that one person doesn't dominate. You know, this can happen among adults, and the people who talk the most are not necessarily the ones who have the most say, but that's just their personality. They're just aggressive. And so one has to find a way, you know, a teaching method. No, I think it can be done if one is aware, you're aware of that problem. And you want to find a way to overcome that, and I think you can. Yes?
The problem is, the father's not meeting beyond 21 and is there, have you found any specific way where you can give unemployed fathers more help in the future? What would be a shelter?
Well, I have become very much concerned and involved in this, and I've worked with the program of Leon Sullivan. As a matter of fact, I have in my pocket a book that I wrote commentary on Sullivan, especially work in South Africa, and I'll talk about it a little later. But in the process of being a theologian in residence, as it were, looking over his shoulder as to the Christian background and basis for his involvement, I got to know a great deal about the TOL operation, especially in the United States, in the inner cities. OIC is a program that Dr. Leon Sullivan, who is a Baptist minister in Philadelphia, started some years ago, probably two decades ago. He studied Columbia in sociology as a part of his training for the ministry, and started a program in Philadelphia by turning an old jailhouse into a training center for unskilled workers. And he said he took a house of despair and turned it into a house of hope. He's very graphic in his illustrations. And as I visited that, he has a cell downstairs in the old jailhouse with ball and chain. And he says when he has someone who doesn't want to really get busy, you know, train for a job, he takes them down and reminds them what might happen. But he started doing this on the streets of Philadelphia. He was an athlete. He's about 6'7", quite an athlete in his youth, and he played with the youth. He found an old garage, he picked up a basketball, and he got the guys off the street corner and started bouncing the ball, and finally got him a little team together, and the next thing they were in Sunday school. The next thing they were in that skill development program. And that has taken off, and he took the funds of the church. The church contributed to the first beginnings of the program. Now he has government contracts and corporate contracts. He's on the board of General Motors. He gets contracts from General Motors and so forth. And what he does is to train young men who are unemployables. They're so far down until, you know, they couldn't get a job if they wanted one, and trains them from the ABCs, courses in grammar and elementary math, whatever's necessary, motivation, courses in psychology to motivate them to want to be somebody, to respect themselves, respect their women and their children and so forth. And so he has been able to have a comprehensive program to take, to reclaim people who are really on the dump heaps of society and to make them responsible human beings. And the interesting thing is he can point to young men that he got out the corner who are now physicians and lawyers and doctors, as well as those who are mechanics and engineers and so forth. It's a tremendous success story in human development. But first you had someone who was sensitive to the need. And in 100 cities in the United States today, that program is going, and in some foreign countries. So I think that's the kind of project. And it's motivated by his understanding of the gospel. He has a major congregation in Philadelphia, and his base is a Black Baptist church. But springing from that is this whole program. And he has involved a large number of Black ministers and other ministers in the program. There's no discrimination in the program. It's for the poor and for those who need jobs, for Spanish-speaking people, for whites, for whoever comes to, you know, join the program. He tries to do what he can to put them on their feet. The idea is to put people on their feet and to give them a sense of worth and a sense of responsibility, develop skills so they can be. And he employed, and he opens doors through his contacts for them to get jobs once they have developed those skills. So we need more programs like that.